Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and pleased to have back today Trish McCannon as my guest. We're going to be talking about the galactic alignment and what's going on in 2013. We all made it through 2012 without too much problem, but some of us are a little bit feeling some symptoms, some spinning sensations, some dizziness, some nausea that are common amongst the people who can feel energy, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Hello, Trish. How are you doing today?
Oh, good morning, Susan. It's always a pleasure to be on your wonderful show, and happy 2013 to you.
Same to you. So what
it's kind of
is
hard to believe we're here, isn't it?
Well, I heard you went to, did you go to South America? Did you?
Yeah, I was in Central America at the heart of the Mayan prophecies in Chichen Itza, where the great pyramid of Kukulcan, or pyramid of Quetzalcoatl, is located. That's the one where every March in the spring equinox, the light falls in such a way that it appears that there is a serpent descending down to Earth. And as you may know, the descent of this, let us say, great serpent rope, which is under an analogy for something, is something that has been prophesied to be involved in this whole end of one age, beginning of another age, and a world transition. So that's, of course, one of the great mysteries of, you know, when we begin to lay out these prophecies, and I'm sure we'll get into that in the show, but it was really great. I was down there for a week, and there were other wonderful people. There was a conference called Synthesis 2012 put on by Michael DeMartinis out of, San Francisco. And there were some other great speakers there, wonderful people. Hunbots Men, the Mayan elder, was there. Some amazing musicians, people who opened for 30,000, 40,000 people. Nikki Scully was there, of course, who's written Egyptian things. And just a number of other remarkable people, and the people who attended, many of them were musicians, artists, performers, and people who are very much in celebration of this transition. And Hunbots Men actually said when he spoke, he said, "You are the new Mayans. You are the ones who've shown up to pave the way for this world transition." There was a shaman down there that I did not meet. I think his name was something like Oro. And he had talked about the fact that there would be these large plasma beams, if you will, or ropes, which sounds a lot like a serpent rope to me, that would come down and actually strike the area where we were in Chichen Itza. And apparently he had been working for many months with a group of light workers and shamans and holy people down there to lay a grid so that when this wave of energy came down and hit our planet, instead of causing things like earthquakes or, you know, disasters, it in fact would go peacefully into the earth grid and extend out in order to generate a field of love and balance and awakening for the planet. So when we got down there, we heard that. And interestingly enough, I think on YouTube or the internet, you can see a picture of a big beam of light coming down and striking the top of the pyramid of Kukulcan. And whether or not that was a beam that could only be picked up in digital photography or if people actually really saw it, I don't know. The day of the actual December 21st, of course, we were there at sunrise, and the holy people, the shamans and the Mayans were there doing ceremony. But there were a lot of other people there. There were Christians that were doing ceremony. There were metaphysical groups and spiritual groups and, you know, people who were dancing their prayers into the land around the pyramid. And you can't climb the pyramid anymore because some of the outer-facing rocks have kind of fallen down, and I think they feel like it's dangerous having so much wear and tear on it, which I think that's correct. But I had climbed it many, many years ago. I've been to Chichen Itza about five or six times, And it was still a very powerful place and, you know, a huge city. J.J. Hertak was there, who wrote The Keys of Enoch. He's, of course, just lovely. He has a paranormal research institute, and he's been doing a conference in Cancun for the last few years. My friend Alan Steinfeld, who has New Realities Television and Radio up in New York City, he was there. Deborah Moldav from the World Peace Prayer Society, who where you plant those amazing peace poles, may peace prevail on Earth. She was there. She's now the liaison with the United Nations for the World Peace Prayer Society. And I think there are about six people who did videos of about six of us speaking and talking about this, and they may be up on YouTube. So it was a very, you know, exciting opportunity to be right at the heart of the end of one era and the birth of a new era. And instead of bringing it in with fear, bringing it in with celebration and love, mm-hmm. because the prophecies are that this next age that we're moving into, which is another 26,000-year age or 25,920-year age, but of course it has cycles within it, that it's to become an age that is ruled by the element of ether, which, mm-hmm. of course, we can only speculate about what that means. But ether would tend to make us feel like that something about this prophecy might have to do with a vibrational ascension or moving up process, that the molecules of the third dimensional Earth might be raised to a higher frequency sometime during the unfolding of this age. So that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, what I sort of have gotten from a number of different sources, including some scientific sources, is that energies are coming into the planet before they were reported coming in via the poles, and that was depleting the ozone at the poles, cosmic energy. It was very high energy, and scientists didn't really know what it was. And my brother was the head of the ozone committee for the country at the time, and I asked him about it and suggested that maybe it was this energy, and he said, well, it could be. We don't know what it is. So that was the beginning of this energetic shift. And as we know, pyramids were built on major ley lines. You know, the pyramids in Egypt and the other pyramids are on the very important points. So if you were
right.
to, if you knew when this energy was coming in, you could photograph it if you had the right equipment, and you could probably also measure it. And, you know, I imagine it comes in, and the grid is very important to be laid out, because just like if you put a whole bunch of electricity through a system that has open wires, you're going to get some sparks. So, you know, you got to make sure that grid is okay. When the
ground
energy comes
it,
in.
To ground it so it doesn't overload the system.
Yeah, like
go
into a fault line and cause a problem, or you know, cause a problem with too much pressure so that volcanoes go off. But this is very much what is going on scientifically. It's an energy being added to a system. And the system isn't just Earth, as you know. It's the whole entire solar system. But, of course, we're not on Mars right now, so we can't really measure what's going on there. But it's a solar system energy that's coming in. And it's gonna make changes. And so what, you know, some of the symptoms, fatigue is very common. I mean, I go around this clinic, and everybody's like going, "I'm so tired."
Yes. I think you're right. I mean, we were talking a little earlier about the extreme dizziness and
mm-hmm.
fatigue, exhaustion,
and nausea that goes with
sleep
that
cycles,
sometimes.
Feeling like you need to sleep all the time, feeling unfocused,
mm-hmm.
and you know, not to, like you're in your linear mind, your normal linear thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all this has, it's almost like we're in the null zone. The way I think of it is with magnets, because, you know, we do have small magnets in our brains. And
mm-hmm.
so do all animals. This is how come birds are able to navigate, you know, through the latitude and longitude for migration patterns, and whales and dolphins. And how we know that the magnetic fields have been changing, you know, of course, the magnetic north has moved 9 degrees towards Siberia, which is going to make places like Atlanta and the southeast more temperate with hotter summers, of course, we've been having, and milder mm-hmm. winters, which I guess this is much better than having 18 feet of snow in Siberia.
Yeah, that's true.
But when we were below the galactic equator, it's kind of like, you know, we had the North Pole at the top where we're used to and the South Pole at the bottom where we're used to, and at least we kind of had our feet on the ground. But now that mm-hmm. we've entered this center point of the 900 years or 1,000 years that it takes for us to move through the galactic center, what December 21st was, which I think, you know, all of us were holding our breath to see exactly how it played out, but what the Mayans had said is it's the midpoint, the 450-year point in the crossing of the galactic center or the galactic bulge, which mm-hmm. would basically mean that we're kind of like in the suspended null zone. I think of it much like if we were an astronaut on a ship. It's not so much gravity in the normal sense, but it is the gravity in our brains where the poles of the brain are being, they haven't reversed yet. It's all kind of floating around, and this is why I think we're so dizzy and unfocused. Wouldn't you say?
I think so, too, yeah. Do you know that not just the magnetic pole of Earth is shifting, but also Saturn and Jupiter have shifted? They've changed their orientation.
Well, you know, for years I've been speaking about this. In fact, the last 2 years I've been doing complete weekend programs on the galactic alignment. And here in Atlanta, I taught a class this past summer, a 9-week class, because it's such a very big conversation, and it's affecting not just the biological life and the human life and the animals' lives and so forth, but it also is opening us up to frequencies of light and activation of the pineal gland. And this mm-hmm. is connected with wisdom that was taught within the ancient mystery schools of Egypt and the Celtic lands and the Far East, and certainly in South America and Central America, all of these mystery schools, at the heart of them was the knowledge that when one of these 26,000-year precession of the equinoxes or precession of the ages changes, when we come into this point of alignment, which happens, you know, about every 13,000 years when we cross below the plane of the galactic mm-hmm. equator, or we come into alignment crossing above the plane of the galactic equator, like a great sine wave, at each of these points, there are certain energies available to our solar system and to our sun from the center of the galaxy that are not available any other time. And when we drop below the galactic equator, which is what happened 11,500 years ago when Atlantis fell and the mid-Atlantic ridge mm-hmm. fractured, and of course then we wound up having a real loss of a lot of the history, not to mention the technology and so forth that had overseen the previous age, we wound up, you know, we had the story of the Great Flood. That's what really mm-hmm. happened. And, of course, the ancients talk about the fact that, and by the ancients, I mean the Greeks, the Etruscans, the Romans, the Egyptians, the Persians, the, you know, Sumerians, the Babylonians, the Assyrians, the cultures that we consider to be ancient in the mm-hmm. last 13,000 years. They talk about the fact that the world alternately goes back and forth between what they call a galactic summer and a galactic winter. And in mm-hmm. the galactic winter, we have either a flood or an ice age. In the galactic summer, mm-hmm. we usually have something that's fire-oriented, whether it's mm-hmm. when the asteroid hit the Yucatan Peninsula 65 million years ago when all the dinosaurs died, or mm-hmm. it's the solar mass ejection that creates an increase in light and heat mm-hmm. to our planet. And so many have speculated exactly how it would play out. And, I mean, clearly we've survived these things because we're still here. And these ages have shifted before many, many, many times. We can see that the North and South Pole have shifted many times by looking at the mm-hmm. geologic table and just simply going down through the strata. Because when the shifts take place, and volcanoes go off, and then the magma solidifies, the iron file fillings within the rock sediment will align to the new North Pole. So we can look down and go, oh, you know, some of these things happen every 6,500 years. Sometimes they happen every 13,000 years, sometimes every 26,000 years. So we know it's a natural thing that happens, and we certainly do survive it. But, of course, it can create a lot of changes.
It may not be pleasant.
Yes, right.
High winds.
And I think we have evolution or revolution. And the revolution is more like, hey, you guys aren't living in harmony with the planet, and therefore, you know, we have to kind of end the approach you're taking and start over. Or if we have evolution and we wake up, I think that these events do not have to be so devastating. So,
yeah, and I think there's also another factor at play where the souls that are able to be born into a system, they change in quality. I mean, as we're coming toward 2012, we see a lot of the indigo and crystal children very much different than the children born, say, in the 1920s or 1930s. So, as we approach this going into the galactic summer, I think the way we get 1,000 years of peace is predicted in Revelations is simply the people born into the planet are not so violent.
Yeah, I agree. I think we really are in the process of trying to figure out how to change our paradigms, how to change our energy systems from being one that exhausts the planet to being ones that tap into the natural energy that's produced by the planet. This is Nikola Tesla's, of course, inventions from 100 years ago that discovered that, you know, we can tap into the magnetic field of the planet, and this can power our electricity without any, you know, negative carbon footprint. So I think we're taking a look at new energies, green energies, which is great. Mm-hmm. I think this affects, this whole movement that you and I and a lot of our listeners are part of, where we're trying to choose more organic foods, we're trying to use traditional healing methods with allopathic medicine along with holistic approaches to medicine and wholeness and lifestyles. We're trying to figure out how to balance, you know, making a living and also learning to meditate and going in and spending time, you know, honoring whatever emotional healing we need to do. I think as a society, we're looking at some of our dysfunctional patterns that have been passed down for many generations, from sexual incest and abuse to violence to just simply teaching low self-esteem to children. And we're trying to, you know, take a look at that and say, you know, something about this isn't working. How can we change this, what we're teaching? And, of course, there are people who are on this page, and they're sort of just continuing to repeat the old patterns. But more and more people are awakening and doing work on themselves emotionally and choosing to change the dysfunctional patterns that we grew up with in our society and not perpetuate them.
That's true.
I think it's all part of this shift. And, you know, this class that I taught, I actually, this Galactic Alignment class I began here in Atlanta, did not want to give up its, they were just like, oh my gosh, this information is so precious. They have continued to want to meet. And, of course, I was on the road a lot of the fall. I think September, October, November, December, I was in North Carolina, Ohio, San Francisco, New York City, and then finally Chichen Itza. So I'm back in Atlanta for January, February, and part of March, and I probably don't start traveling again until towards the end of March. And so I am starting to teach some classes here on Wednesday nights to a handful of people that are really interested in beginning to work with the energy, because I think we are in this very precious time period. So maybe we're not able to get as much done in our normal linear fashion, but it's an opportunity for us to tune into and tap into the interdimensional energies that are not only aligned with our sun, but our sun being aligned with the center of the galaxy, and the center of our galaxy probably being aligned with the great central sun, wherever that may be. And the reason I say this is because at a scientific level, in 2010, NASA photographed this gigantic plume of massive energy coming from the center of our galaxy, going both above it and below it. So if you mm-hmm. imagine the galactic equator as a horizontal line, this would be like a vertical line going the other way, except it looked like a big pink cosmic egg on the top mm-hmm. and on the bottom. And what the Mayans have been talking about is the fact that what we are going through this time is not just our solar system, is not just our galaxy, it's a multi-galactic event where there is some activation going on at the center of a number of galaxies, which of course are going to affect many solar systems, systems that probably some of them have life like ours, and some of them probably don't have life as we know it. And when you go out and look, there are a number of galaxies that you can see this same exact explosion happening in at this exact time. Now, of course, you know, in order for us to see it based on the speed of light, maybe it happened, who knows when it actually happened, but it's reaching our planet now. So maybe it happened 12,000 years ago, and it's taken 12,000 years for that energy to reach us. But simultaneously, we can photograph this galactic central explosion happening in many galaxies, and we can see it now. Mm-hmm. So it does seem to be that there is a bigger thing occurring. And, this gets into, all we can do is speculate. We can look at history. We can look at science. We can listen to what the masters have told us, or what the Mayans or the Druids have prophesied, or whatever, or the Christians, in Revelations. Mm-hmm. We can try to imagine what it can be. But the truth is, we're in it.
Is this the photon belt that Barbara Marciniak talks about?
No, I like Barbara Marciniak. I think she's a wonderful person. In Barbara Han Clow, actually, the publisher, I like her and Jerry a great deal. They owned Bear & Company for many years. But I can't tell you that. The way that the photon belt was originally explained to me made no sense. And it was kind of like mm-hmm. a spinning donut of light that was revolving around the, like a big light amoeba, and we happened to be colliding with it. That made mm-hmm. no sense. However, the idea that, let us say, just to use metaphor, that the great central sun is like a large computer, that all the cycles of time are regulated within the galaxies. So the mainframe computer sends out a signal to all the galaxies, and the galaxies send out a signal to the suns in the solar systems. And then the magma core, which is almost like an inner sun inside the planet, begins to shift. Well, our magma core takes about 400 years to make one rotation and inside. And, of course, it's mm-hmm. been spinning for a long time clockwise. It is now reversed. It is now moving counterclockwise. And this is extraordinary. This is just pure science that tells us that we are going to have a magnetic pole reversal in our lifetime. And, of course, exactly what that looks like, we're having to simply guess. There's two kinds of pole reversals, a crustal land shift, which could be very devastating. That's where,
right.
Let's just say the continents literally begin to move and drift at once. That could be, buildings could tumble and fall,
right,
and
yeah.
earthquakes and all that. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're talking about that. a magnetic pole reversal, and NOVA even had a wonderful special on this some years ago. They said that the northernmost points have now turned southern, the southernmost points are in the process of turning northern, and when that happens, we will have a reversal. So what exactly does that look like? Well, no one knows exactly, but certainly it could mean that the planet begins to spin in the opposite direction. If the magma within the planet has now begun to spin counterclockwise, we could actually stop, and this would be the 3 days and three nights of darkness and light, depending on what side of the planet you're on. And we see that in the historic record. When we go to India,
we sure do.
Or China, they have 3 days of light, and at the same exact time in South America, they had 3 days of darkness.
Right.
So, and even in the Bible, in the Old Testament, you remember the whole walls of Jericho where the sun appeared to stand still in the sky for 3 days?
Right.
Well, I mean, what could possibly cause that? So it's possible that the rotation of the magma inside the Earth, rotating the other way, when it builds up enough momentum, that it could literally stop the planet, and then the planet would begin to spin back the other way, which would mean that the sun would rise in the west and it would set in the east. And as crazy as that might sound, you know, to listeners that don't have any familiarity with history, this is actually what the ancient history books tell us has occurred before, that that there is a time when the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, and time when it rises in the west and sets in the east. And this was encoded within the mystery schools into the concept of a god, which of course is a symbolic term here, named Janus, J-A-N-U-S. Janus was the two-headed god of the two horizons. And so Janus, if you look at him, one side of his face is the Christed male, and one side of his face is the Christed female. And he was always linked to the cycles of time. And in the depictions of this Christed being, you know, one part of him is facing the sun rising in the east, one part rising in the west. And if you go back in history to Egypt, during the time of the Ptolemy kings, and Ptolemy, as you remember, was one of Alexander the Great's generals, who, you know, Alexander, if you ever watched that movie Alexander with Colin Farrell, he turns to Ptolemy when they're in Persia or India and says, "When all this is over, what land would you like?" And Ptolemy says, "I'd like Egypt." So Ptolemy, around 333 B.C., wound up becoming the ruler of Egypt. And so that was the last of the kings of Egypt, and Cleopatra, of course, was the very last one of that line. And he set up the city of Alexandria as a Mecca and of wisdom and knowledge, with Greek philosophers and scientists and Jewish philosophers and Buddhist philosophers and the Egyptian wisdom schools. All that was in the city of Alexandria. Well, during the time of Ptolemy Philadelphus, who I think was the second or the third of the Ptolemies, that Ptolemy asked the high priest Manetho of Heliopolis. Heliopolis was the city of the sun, and it was at the heart of the Egyptian mysteries, to go and get the king's list of all of the kings that had ruled Egypt. And Manetho did so, and he came back and he said, "Egypt has been around for 36,000 years. For 12,000 years, the gods ruled. For 18,000 years, the demigods ruled. And then, you know, the humans began to rule around 3,000 and something BC. So, of course, this is when we officially count history, is when the humans came into power, and we, of course, blithely kind of wipe out the rest. Well, during that time, the history recorded that the sun had changed position, rising in the west, setting in the east, rising in the east, setting in the west, four times. So four times in 36,000 years. So we have no idea exactly what the mechanism is You know, we're still trying to figure it out. Is it the precession of the equinox every 26,000 years? Obviously, if it's four times in 36,000 years, it happens more frequently than that.
That can't be it, yeah.
Right. So I know that was a long explanation, but a little bit of grounding with history for our listeners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the other
thing. Yeah, how are you guys experiencing it? Since I've come back from the Mayan trip, I mean, I felt really dizzy and disoriented. And, you know, the question, of course, is how long is it going to last? And, you know, it's great for doing spiritual work, meditation, clairvoyant work, healing work.
And
it's
manifestation.
You
can manifest really quickly right now.
It's hard.
Well, actually, I started feeling the symptoms about, probably August or September, and they were spinning sensations in the chakras, and they were really intense, very interesting. And some of the boards that I'm on, unfortunately, some of the patients think that their illness is causing this, and, you know, I'm trying to explain to them, no, it's a spiritual shift. But ringing in the ears, it's not ringing like you get with, you know, Meniere's disease. It's more of a high-pitched noise that gets real intense when you're in the energy, in the wave of energy. It gets really loud.
That would be what the masters might call the, it's possible that it's linked to what's called a shabda, or the Bani, B-A-N-I, which is the audible life stream that is behind everything. And
I've heard
since I was a child, and it can change from going high-pitched to very low, deep roaring sensation.
It can be roaring.
It's possible that because we're in this clear alignment with the galactic center, we have more access into the spiritual energies that underlie visible reality.
Well, that would appear to be. You know, I do healing in the clinic frequently, almost daily, because I see a lot of patients, and we do surgery here too. So the patients are reporting that the healings are very, very much more powerful than they were in the past, and increasingly so. You know, they get more and more. What used to maybe take me 20 minutes takes me 2 minutes. You know, it's very interesting. So, yeah, we're in a stream
of something. Oh, I love that. It's really powerful for me to hear that because, you know, while all this is not so great for, like I said, the linear world, it's great for moving through issues, dropping emotional baggage.
Right, exactly.
Healing the subtle energy body.
Clearing, right.
That's great to hear. And you're such a wonderful doctor and healer, Susan. I just take my hat off to you. If there were more people like you in the world, it would be a completely more marvelous world. You know?
Well, I appreciate that. So basically, we're anticipating that we will be able to, solve difficult diseases, bring in information that will help people become younger. You know, I think this energy will eventually be anti-aging. I anticipate that.
That sounds good. I like that. Younger,
disease.
Longer. I think especially the baby boomers would be very happy to hear that one.
We would, wouldn't we? And maybe without surgery. An energetic shift is pervasive in everything. I anticipate it will affect government. It will affect, you know, institutions like medicine and law. It'll affect religion, spirituality. And I do think that if you limit the vibrational nature of the beings that can be born into a system to that of higher vibration, you can very quickly solve the problems we have and then not create any new problems, you see. So in a couple of generations, things could really turn around.
Well, I love that approach. I do think that, of course, Pluto is in Capricorn, and Pluto is a planet of life and death and transformation and rebirth and the great spiritual mysteries and bringing the secrets to light. And in Capricorn rules governments. So what it speaks to is the transformation of our governmental systems. and our corporate structures. Saturn would also
and
rule
financial
rule business and
right.
And so Pluto's about 8 degrees of Capricorn. It's really been, you know, in there for about 5 years now.
You know,
it's
the
really,
day that it went into it was the day the stock market crashed in 2008. The very day that Pluto went into Capricorn was the crash of the stock market. And we were told about that in meditation about a month prior. So we all got out of the stock market, and I put my retirement account in silver and gold, and my stockbroker said I was the only one that made money that he knew.
Well, that is awesome. Well, we also have Saturn. Saturn is, of course, the same as Capricorn. They rule the same energies. Saturn's the government, and guess what? It's mm-hmm. in Scorpio. It's as the day of December 21st, 2012, it was exactly at 8 degrees of Scorpio, so it was sextiling that Pluto. But, it, you know, Saturn will stay in Scorpio for 2.5 years. So this is saying the governments of the world must, you know, take a deeper look and transform and change. And then Mr. Pluto, which will be 14 to 17 years, it'll be in Capricorn. So it's saying change, transform, die and be reborn, governments of the world, corporate structures of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So those two are carrying the same essential message, one for about 14 years and one for about 2.5 years. We also have, you know, at an astrological level, I ran the chart, as you can imagine, for the Mayan prophecy date of December 21st, 2012, and I ran it for 11:11 a.m. because those were very sacred numbers within the mystery schools and religions, having to do with the portals of knowledge where we step from the mundane world into the spiritual realms. And we have a couple of other long-term planets, Chiron, which is a planetoid, bigger than a moon, smaller than a planet, between Saturn and, you know, Uranus, which mm-hmm. always represents where we're wounded as a planet and how, if we heal that wound, we can step into our own mastery as a healer. Chiron is conjunct, that means next to Neptune, and Neptune is the great mystic. On the low end, it's illusion and glamour, but on the high end, it's one who's spiritually connected. So Neptune is 0 degrees of Pisces. It's just moved in. So Neptune and Pisces, Neptune rules Pisces. So it's use your spiritual connection with the source of the Christ consciousness, Pisces, and healed your old wounds, Chiron. So they're about mm-hmm. 5 degrees apart, so they're what's called conjunct. So if they were friends, they'd be sitting together at a restaurant having lunch, and mm-hmm. and Neptune would be saying, I wish to attune to the Christ consciousness. That's all I want to do is go into the inner worlds. And Chiron would say, will it help us to heal our issues? Through the power of love, I will heal my issues, and I'll transform mm-hmm. and use this connection with, let us say, the Christ heart consciousness to help heal others and bring healing into the world. So that's a very, very positive thing for a lot of people to go in and, you know, use this profound spiritual connection energy to complete karma from this lifetime mm-hmm. or past lives, and to, you know, heal these old wounds that many of us have carried for the centuries, to get rid of our bag of boulders that we might be lugging around from
right.
hurt or pain or wounding or lack of self-worth or poverty consciousness mm-hmm. or anger or, you know, whatever it is that happened, and let it go. And that connection to claim our own inner healer. And maybe step more fully into what we've really come to the planet to do, individually, but in the arena of our own life.
It'll be interesting to see how these old feuds that go back, you know, hundreds of years, you know, the Irish English feuds and the Palestinian Jewish feuds, play out now. you know, the energy that kept them going may be not there anymore.
Well, it would be great if that changed. I think that one of the reasons those feuds got created in the first place, and this, of course, gets into a deeper subject about the hidden history of our planet, you know, and the Anunnaki gods that came here as teachers for humanity and did a lot of really wonderful things for us. But they, of course, being human, although very long-lived and taller than we were, they, you know, had their own challenges and their own challenges within their personalities, within the planet, within the ways that they thought that humans should be governed and so forth. And some of those gods got along with each other just fine, and some of them had their own conflicts. And, you know, over the millennia that have passed before what we consider traditionally to be recorded history, some of these conflicts focused in the Middle East, and some of them were, let us say, god rulers that were up in, you know, Samaria and Babylon and Assyria. Some of them were rulers that were out of Egypt. Some of them were rulers that decided, hey, I'm going to, you know, claim a bunch of people, the Hebrews, for my own. And so they were all fighting over that Sinai Peninsula area where originally there was a spaceport. And right. Jerusalem was the center of that. Mm-hmm. And so most of the people who are fighting there now, they don't really know what they're fighting for. They,
they
you
know, don't know why they're fighting.
Jews, Arabs, Palestinians, you know,
uh-huh.
it's just generational now because someone killed somebody else and these wrongs
mm-hmm.
were done
right.
to me.
Yeah.
But this is something
goes
that goes
way
back really
and
thousands of years where these they were, you know, commissioned to fight one another for
mm-hmm.
Different gods' agendas. And so, you know, we should just give it up.
Really?
There's lots of ways to go around. Jerusalem's great, but there's also a lot of other holy, sacred places on the planet.
Well, the other thing, too, that I read that was very interesting is the question of why were the Jewish people the chosen people? It's a very interesting answer.
What else do you have?
They were the chosen people because they were given the Ark of the Covenant to keep safe. And the Ark of the Covenant is very, very important in the ascension. It's like the ignition to the ascension. And that's why they were chosen, because they had the Ark of the Covenant. That's the role they played.
They were given a lot of really great things. They had the Tree of Life, which came out of Egypt, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, fortunately we still have the Tree of Life, and the Kabbalah teachings taken to the higher level are very powerful. I do a lot of teaching about the Tree of Life. I love that subject. They had the Seed of Life, which kind of got lost, the Flower of Life, which got lost, and people like John Vlow, Melchizedek have brought that back to light in the last
mm-hmm.
20 years. They had the Jewish bagel, which sounds silly, but that's the tube torus, which is the shape of the universe. It's the shape of UFOs
right.
and of the galaxies and the solar
mm-hmm.
system. So they were given a lot of really wonderful knowledge and wisdom, which I'm sure Moses brought it out of Egypt because he was trained
mm-hmm.
as a high priest of Heliopolis. But
right.
a lot of the people that he was overseeing in that desert 40 years were not necessarily people who were trained in any way as initiates. And so he had to encode a lot of this information. And then between
mm-hmm.
the Babylonian captivity, the Assyrians, all the things that happened over 1,400 years, a lot of this knowledge was lost. Or you have symbolic remnants without the full understanding of what the depth and breadth of that wisdom really was. And fortunately, people like you and me and some other wonderful teachers out there are in the process of bringing these pieces back to life for everybody. You know, it was great that someone was entrusted to keep them, but now it's time for everybody to have this knowledge for global awakening.
Yeah, I think
so. Yeah,
think
with the Ark
time.
Of the Covenant, when I was in Egypt, I remember being taken to the Temple of Khnum, where it had been kept for a while. And, of course,
mm-hmm.
there are people who believe it's now and has been in Ethiopia for a while. I don't know if you know any more about that or you want to say any more about it.
Well, William Henry had met with the widow of a man who actually photographed it and it was in the catacombs below Jerusalem. I think the one in Ethiopia, he felt anyway, was one of the copies, which there were copies, obviously. It's just like, you know, now with the stories about Saddam Hussein, there was a real Saddam Hussein, and then there was a bunch of people who looked like him. But that's a common method used when you have something of great value, so nobody really knows where it is. But anyway, he had a device like a endoscope, you know, a real long endoscope that he went in and photographed something that in an area that could not be accessed. So I think it's under Jerusalem with that evidence, although, you know, that could also be a copy, I guess. But he had reason to believe that he had devoted his entire life to finding it, and his widow felt that he did find it. And then I think William Henry wrote a book about it. So
Lovely. And his wife, Claire, I think she's really a wonderful, heart-centered person. Have you gotten to meet her?
No, huh? Just William, because I've interviewed him so many times on the radio show.
Yeah, Claire's British and very heart-centered, and they make a wonderful couple. So, I had William to Atlanta this past summer.
Yeah, I saw you there.
Yeah, right. So, you know, we're running in the same circles. Well, you know, here in Atlanta, I am continuing to teach, and I don't know if I had told you this, but, you know, I've been teaching my mystery school, the Phoenix Fire Lodge, the Order of the Eagle and the Dove, which are, of course, our hermetic symbols, the phoenix for the initiate or the Christ within, and the eagle and the dove for the Divine Father and the Divine Mother. I've been teaching that mystery school for about 7 years, and a lot of people have asked me from all over the country and also Canada and Europe if I had an online class, and I had to say no. So about 2 years ago, when I started a new round of the school, I committed to creating a really wonderful online program. And so I finished this fall, I finished the first of 12 online classes. And they're not up online yet, but since I announced it on Coast to Coast last January or February, I've had people emailing me and saying, you know, I'd like to do it. So if any of our listeners is interested in knowing more about the mysteries, I'll give you my website, my email, and you're welcome to email me and say, please send me the introduction to the mysteries, which I'll just send to you for free. It's about 65 pages. It comes in as a PDF with lots of gorgeous images. And at the back is about a 10-page overview of the first 12 classes with, you know, some depth of explanation of how they unfold. But I now have students actually studying this all around the country, Canada, and even in Europe. And I send them out as PDFs. They're each about 100 to 180 pages. They average about 150 with gorgeous images and beautiful exercises and great meditations. But they deal with hermetics and the hidden history of the planet, the very nature of the soul. They teach the Native American twisted hair traditions of the mineral kingdoms, the plant, the animal, and the human kingdoms, the tree of life and the way of the return, how the evolutional cycles of time affect human consciousness and slumber, and really help people at a very universal level to begin to awaken to their own roles as a priest or priestess in a more universal sense in our modern day. So if it's okay, maybe I could give out my email and also the website.
Please do.
Yeah?
Yes.
So the website, I'm sorry they're not up online yet. I have a new website being created, and hopefully that will go up in the next month or two. But my current website is www.trishamcannonspeaks.com, and that's T-R-I-C-I-A. And McCannon is just like it sounds, M-C-C-A-N-N-O-N, and then the word speaks.com. That'll take you to the site. But if you want to email me for the introduction to the mysteries, again, I'm happy to send it for free. And that is TrishaMcCann1111. So Trisha McCannon, and then the numbers 1111 at yahoo.com. So it's spelled just the same way. And You know, if you forget that one, there's one attached to my website, and you can email me for that on Tricia McKenna Speaks@yahoo.com. That'll get me, and my assistant will forward it, and I'm happy to send you the intro. But it's interesting because I have all these students who are saying, when are you going to teach the next round? And, you know, I'm contemplating exactly what that looks like because there's so much to say, but we also have to have the foundational knowledge in order to be able to build upon to create this larger understanding of the universe and how it works.
And this knowledge, it's important to understand that this knowledge was not freely disseminated until more recently. This knowledge was the knowledge of the ancient mystery schools and then of the secret societies. And then now only recently is coming out in a form that allows one to, work on themselves and you know, really understand what's going on around them during this time of great change. This is knowledge that is quite precious, and it'd be a great time to take advantage of this right now.
It's, you know, and within the ancient mystery schools, it was 20 years where you were fully immersed in this in order to actually grasp the depth and breadth of this. And within the mysteries, they had three basic levels of initiation. The first order was always devoted to the healers. So it was the divine feminine energies of seeing the divine in all the patterns of botany and chemistry and astronomy and astrology and herbs and medicine. And it was always about spiritual service because through spiritual service, we ourselves grow. And so the divine feminine, which, of course, unfortunately, we lost a lot of that in Christianity, was the first order. And then the second order was the mysteries of the divine father and son energies. The ancients believed that the divine mother comes into the world again and again and again and again. And that's why within Egypt, she was known as She of 10,000 Names and 10,000 Faces, or Isis, the I Am principle of the female. But they believe that the Divine Father, the great eagle whose wings spin the universe, comes in through these incarnations of these four great Kumaras, or Divine Sons. Mm-hmm. And so when I teach the mysteries, of course, I'm teaching male and female energies because it's very important. And the third level, of course, was the union of the two, because without both sides, you can't ever reach mastery. But within the first level, I'm teaching, multiple layers of the hermetics and the history and how to work with your dreams and soul travel and the descent of the soul and how to work with the angelic kingdoms and all of the other things I mentioned. But the second level for me is done very much within the Egyptian mysteries, where I have weekends dedicated to the principles behind both male and female energies. Like Hathor being healing and Thoth being the wisdom schools themselves and the sacred geometry of behind the universe and so forth. So it's a powerful time to have these tools because, as you said, they have been hidden. And many people who are involved in the metaphysical or New Age movement, I think, are trying to bring sections of these forward. There's some amazing people working in sound or vibration healing or gems or plants or herbs. But in the mystery schools, it was a coherent system where you understood how the pieces all fit together. And that's something that in our day and age, we're just in the beginning of trying to put this grand design back in place, so that it all works together, and we see the profundity of the plan, and again, we're able to hold this at a universal level where it's not about dogma or guilt or shame or blame. It's about connection with spirit and self-empowerment and unity consciousness that has the power to transform and change the world in a very pragmatic way.
Yeah, last night in meditation, our meditation group and Trisha's mystery school group are often the same. And so they taught me about the laws of Amat. Is that right? Is that how you pronounce it?
Maat
the Egyptian,
is the goddess that represents
the goddess,
truth.
Right, right.
And so her symbols were the feather of truth. And I love Maat. She's, you know, if you see all these pictures of the pharaohs and the queens, they're literally kneeling before Maat.
Right.
Maat is working with them, meaning that as rulers, we seek to embody the highest level of truth and to see truth, to see past the illusion or the bullshit or the, the greed or whatever the crazy program is that's going on, to see what is the highest and the best, what is aligned with God's will or cosmic truth.
What we did last night. So that was really good. I appreciated
that. Fabulous. Yes, it's true that some of the people who have been so deeply involved in my school really, really love your meditation groups, and they rave about them, and you live a little further across town from me, and they're kind of on your side of town, and so they'll like say, I'm going to Susan's group, and so it really sounds wonderful. I know I've gotten a chance to speak there once, and I think attend once or twice, but it's wonderful that you have it. Susan.
Well, when you're in town, we would love to have you back for Noetic Science.
I am here. January, February, and the first part of March. So I would be happy to do it, and maybe you can, have.
I'll let Nicole know to get back in touch with you about that. Right. Well, thank you so much for joining us this hour. It was a bit very educational and enlightening as usual.
Well, I love it, and I think the work that you are doing in the world is very precious, and it's a joy for me to get a chance to share some of the work I'm doing. And if you would call me, tomorrow morning or Monday morning, maybe we can make a date to get together. I don't get to see you often enough. It's such, you're really a sister, a spiritual sister, and not only are you working, tirelessly on helping to heal people on a one-on-one basis, physically, like I'm doing that emotionally, but you are a rare gem that we have here in the Atlanta area. And for anybody listening to the show, I can't say enough about Susan. Thank you for having me on today.
Well, thank you, Trish. I really appreciate you coming on. Next week, we have Catherine Frombovich, who wrote a book called A Cancer Answer, Holistic Breast Cancer Management. And then on the 26th of January, PMH Atwater, back with near-death experiences, the rest of the story. And then Philip Coppens will return on the 2nd of February with the Lost Civilization Enigma. And then on the 9th, Henry Massey, Choice Point, Align Your Purpose. Noetic Science in January will be given by Dr. Megan Laban, who will be discussing Naturopathic Medicine 101, its philosophies, and seven main natural therapies. That's Thursday, January 17th at 7:15 in the Dunwoody office. And Lorraine Eldridge will be here from January 28th to February 1st doing bioscans with the GDV camera, which is also known as Killerinian photography, energy field balance, organ balance, gland balance, and structural balance. We also have every Wednesday now an Abraham Hicks meetup group. Kent Boxberger is doing it here at the center at 7:30 every Wednesday. It's a free group where they study the law of attraction through the Abraham Hicks material, video material. Anyway, thanks a lot for joining us. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show.